Hello everybody, welcome to the Game Audio Podcast. This is episode 13. Today, it's just me, myself, Anton, and...
Damien, hey, I'm here. It's good to see you. Good to be here. Good to catch up, finally. Wow, the time happens. It goes fast.
It sure does. Ooh. It sure does. There might be some reminiscing over the past 12 months on this episode. However, we also are going to be talking a little bit about some games, about some personal development for some of us. So this is going to be a short and sweet one while we are in the middle of getting ready for our next episode with some really cool guests, but more about that later. So, well, let's start off with some news. There wasn't really a lot of news, at least I didn't notice a lot of news. The one thing I did notice was that AudioEase is going to give their impulses to WYS users. Or, well, give, I'm pretty sure that there'll be some kind of fee involved. But, I don't know, I thought it was pretty interesting that you can get the Altiverb impulses in your game.
Yeah, this seems like a great next step forward, and again, kind of another place where we've got this convergence between, you know, the pro audio world. I mean, how long have they had convolution over on the DAW side of life? Probably 5-10 years. And just now we're getting into games as of the last couple of years, and to see this influx of resources coming over from pro audio is awesome. It just bodes well. It shows game audio merging quickly with what's out there in the pro audio side of life, and just continues to drive the experience closer and closer to the experience you have across other medias, right? Mm.
So have you worked yourself on any games that had in-game convolution reverb? Because we used Altiverb quite a lot in our sound design processes, but not we don't have a convolution reverb in-game. So I was just wondering if you have any like experience using it in-game.
I haven't done a whole lot of tweaking on them. However, when we were doing the mix for Infamous 2, Andy Martin up at Sucker Punch had been experimenting with convolution and actually used it for voice processing on one of the lead characters in the game.
Yeah, we definitely use it for a lot of our characters as well. But it was
actually in real time running in Wise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So indeed, it was convolution at runtime. He was using it to process the dialogue for the Beast.
Okay.
And again, it was this really cool reverse reverb thing. Uh-huh. that sounded super cool, extremely fitting, and again, tweakable at runtime. Yeah. I remember being at a point in the mix where we needed to, you know, balance the convolution to make sure that it was sitting appropriately and everything was there at our fingertips. We didn't have to dig back through source files or, you know, dig up plugin chains. It was all just modifiable and easily tweakable in that 11th hour of mixing. And so, you know, again, the more knobs that we have at our fingertips to be able to push and pull, you know, the better we can fine tune the results for the overall aesthetic.
True, as long as those knobs are actually attached to something, because there are plenty of tools out there that will give you plenty of knobs that don't actually do things.
Right, the producer knob?
Oh, producer knobs, yeah, but you know, when it's about in-house tools in particular, I guess, you know, there's a lot of, you already make the knob for a feature that will come live later, but then for some reason the feature never gets there.
Right. You know,
people tweak a button that doesn't do anything for years, and you fool yourself into thinking that it actually does make a difference.
Right.
You know, especially in situations in the past where you had to wait for the whole game to reconvert and to recreate a similar situation, you can fool yourself. You can fool yourself to think something has changed. Sounds
when
different.
It has it. Yeah.
It works better now, but no, it's actually exactly the same. Yeah.
Disconnected.
Yeah. That's why I always run the game through as an input on my Nuendo setup so that I can record it. And if I want to go back and listen to what I did, I can always just, you know, go back half an hour, see how it sounded half an hour ago, and did I actually improve it, or am I just fooling myself into thinking I'm making it sound better, which is quite easy to do, unfortunately.
Ah, that's a great workflow. Yeah. It's good to have that sanity check to look back at.
Especially in the crunch time and when you're mixing, you know, it's the mind will definitely play tricks on you.
Yeah, I was going to say those times when you are doing that kind of iterative tweaking, you know, is usually in the middle of the night, and it's hard to see clearly a lot of times what effect you're having. And so I can see where having your trail of breadcrumbs innuendo just gives you a perspective on where you've been and where you are.
Mm.
Nice technique.
Cool. Yeah, just for the folks that are listening and are wondering why they're feeling sleepy, it's because there's this subliminal sound of my dog snoring next to me. And he's looking at me quite cute, so I don't want to wake a sleeping dogs, let them lie. So I'm sorry if you can hear it really well.
Well, I don't mind.
Okay, if you're driving and listening to this, maybe skip to the next one, get back to this when you're behind your desk or whatever it is, or when you're jogging or something, you need to relax. So, yeah, major thing for me, though, in the last couple weeks has been the final release of Battlefield 3, probably the game I've been waiting for ever since Battlefield 2 got released, pretty much. Well, I guess since Bad Company 2, really, but, you know, it's was definitely something I was very very much anticipating.
Yeah, what aspects were you anticipating coming off of 2 or Bad Company?
Well, I'm just a junkie for Battlefield multiplayer. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can do it wrong, although I do have my preferences, and they didn't make the ultimate game for me. But I don't think that that's possible, I guess, to cater to everybody's preferences, although I'm sure, like every fanboy, I'll claim that I have the one and only true perspective of what a Battlefield game should be. Yeah, I'm sure Ben and Stefan and the other guys over there are smiling at that, because they must be getting plenty of that. No, but we started off playing the single player with the audio team at work, and it's not the most progressive storytelling game. It's not the newest thing, but what they do really well, especially in the audio department. There's a scene where the second guy on a F-18 or F-16 jet, and it starts with getting on board and then taking off, but the taking off is mind-blowing. It's the closest I've ever been to feeling like I've been taking off. I must say, I was playing it in a rather nice cinema room with a large projector screen, really big 7.1 system. Of course, it doesn't hurt, but the sound is definitely spot on. It's the best jet sounds I've heard ever in a game.
And how do you feel like now that they've been steeping in that HDR audio paradigm now for a couple iterations?
Yeah.
And with the challenges of single player as far as directing focus and whatnot, how do you feel like comparatively, you know, they have come into their own with that? And, you know, did they improve on it from the past?
I'm not sure that they changed much as far as the way the game's mixed. They did change some things, I guess, but not something that stood out. I mean, the things that stand out more are the assets themselves and how they're created and how they sound. Because, you know, there's just so many spot-on sounds, like the minigun, which is very hard to do. The jet sounds, very hard to do. They are definitely benchmark, and those are the reason why when I spotted it, the first thing I said is this is they've raised the bar again. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as HDR, I don't think they've touched it. I think it's like they found their setting and are happy with it, because it's just, you know, it has the DICE feeling to it. I think they've maybe tweaked a little bit in release times, because it does feel like it's sometimes slamming down faster than it used to. Mm-hmm. But knowing HDR, it could also be something to do with how the assets are created, because, you know, if your assets are more dynamic, then the HDR will behave differently as well. So it's when with HDR, it's very difficult to say if you're changing something, if it's because of some, you know, it, unless you know from a creator perspective. But it's very difficult to know from a player perspective if the change comes from the asset or from something they've done in a mix.
Sure. Well, interesting. And again, I think that what you said about content really driving it, that, you know, appropriate content for the appropriate situation is not an easy combination a lot of times, especially when you're talking about these real life simulations and, you know, attempts at making things sound accurate. I think that's a hard thing to reproduce, even in 7.1. For them to be wowing you out of your seat, I think that's awesome testament.
Well, one of the things that DICE does really well overall, not just in sound but also in sound, is make focus on things that are important. And, you know, it's very, very easy in any creative endeavor with a large team to focus on every detail. Mm-hmm. You know, it's paint behind where you can actually see, you know, every asset has to be perfect. But, you know, if you look at Battlefield 3 from a game developer perspective, there are a lot of things that are wrong with it. I mean, I could point out things in the audio, like the ambient zones are not perfect. I mean, the walking through water does not sound very good. But if you look at how many times you do that, or how many times you actually notice that, if you were just a layman or not really focused on it, you wouldn't really care. But the things that you do care about, like, you know, a 50 cal is firing at you and bam, all you hear is this awesome bullet whiz by that takes over everything, that, you know, you're get scared in your pants. And it's those kind of things that not only you and I as sound geeks will notice, but also people like the Gamers with Jobs, which is an awesome gamers podcast, one of the few to take seriously. And when they mention audio, it will definitely not be, you know, oh, it's mixed in 7.1 kind of bullshit, but it will be they've done something with audio that other people have not or do not or cannot do. And that's one of the things that they noticed, you know, like when a bullet is firing at me, it actually sounds dangerous. And not a lot of people get any get noticed for that kind of things in audio. So they're definitely doing something really, really well there. And you notice it in other departments as well. Like if you look at some of the skyboxes, if you know, if you're playing a level and you look at it like a game developer, you go and see what they did behind the scenes. You go back and check where something, nothing's happening there. You know, animation is looping. There's a skybox that looks like it's from, you know, Windows 3.1 there. But, you know, that to me tells me, cool, they didn't waste time on creating the most beautiful skybox there, or didn't waste memory on it. They focused on the things that matter when you're playing it like most people are playing it, which is not like a game developer. And, yeah.
It speaks to this idea of, you know, doing what's appropriate for your game, right? Mm. If you're not going to look behind the stage set and see that skybox, then don't spend the time on it. If the most important thing in the game are your guns, then, well, yeah, you better make that stuff shine, right?
Yep.
And this just comes to that balance, I think, that every game developer walks between resources and what they put the effort into, you know? And it makes sense that for a game like Battlefield that the guns would sing. And this brings up an interesting comparison video that went up. Some fan made a Battlefield 3, Modern Warfare 3 comparison video.
Yeah,
that compares the weapons between the two franchises. And again, these are, you know, the premier shooters of the day. At least as far as modern realism goes. And to see those two stacked up against each other, you know, the very clear aesthetic choices that are being made with regards to gun sounds. And I mean, a lot of focus being put on that. Mm. And rightly so. Rightly so. You can check that out at Designing Sound. We'll have a link on the website. Good to see that comparison. And again, like you're saying, absolutely appropriate that they would put the time and effort into making that sound dangerous.
Right? For sure. I've seen a comparison. There are some caveats to point out for it that will be obvious to most people listening to this, but they are in really different environments, and the mix settings for Battlefield were set to the most compressed version. So as far as one-on-one comparison, that's not really valid for it, but it does show the different aesthetic approach.
Right.
I know which one I prefer as an approach. But that, you know, I'm a fanboy, so there's very few things they can do wrong except not release a multiplayer, which is the most fun thing ever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's worth at least looking at it for aesthetics, like you're saying. I think
Sure.
Again, caveats aside, very different approaches.
For sure. Yeah. And buy both games and play them. I haven't actually had time to play Call of Duty yet. I've been too busy playing Battlefield. But I'm sure that during the holiday season, I'll be able to catch up a little bit on my stockpile of games that's piling up. So, have you been playing any games? Because I'm sure you haven't been playing Battlefield or Call of Duty.
I have been taking a slightly more arcade approach to my gaming lately.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, well, okay, there it is. I can usually dip into a game, you know, for a short period of time, and I just want to get right down to it and have some fun. And so I've been playing a shmup called Jamestown.
All right, what's that released on?
It's on Steam, is where I got it.
All right.
It's a PC, maybe XBLA.
Yeah.
Interesting. Don't know.
All
anyway,
right.
Awesome. Like, it's got this kind of old American, you know, war kind of vibe crossed with sci-fi and kind of pulp novels. And so it's this like top down, shoot 'em up, spaceships. And, with this little storyline that kind of interleaves in between it. And I have to say, super fun, totally my genre game. Love it. Love it. Love it. Sound-wise, two guys that I know worked on the sound for it. Initially, when it was an IGF submission, a friend of mine named Justin Mullins, who I worked with on Drawn to Life, threw down with some sounds for it. And then another guy, Jordan Fair, who was the sound designer on Super Meat Boy, one of my top games of last year, just did a sound, I guess, re-release for it during the last DLC pass for it. And I guess, you know, what an interesting genre to design for, because here you have this bullet hell shooter, right, where things are coming at you from all directions. You got to kind of constantly be guns blazing, or at least balance between, you know, speed and firepower. And so you have this kind of constant drone, interplays with the music, and then you have all of the power-ups and, you know, pickups that you get throughout that all have to kind of vie for attention amongst all the explosions. And so you have this very kind of frenetic, you know, gameplay style mirrored by all of the sound happening. And so getting all of that to sit appropriately and sound good, you know, they've done a great job of doing that. And it's just it's an interesting game. Like it a ton. I can jump in and play it a bunch and jump out and be easy. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. What engine did they use for it?
Ooh, I want to say that they wrote their own, but I don't know.
All right,
we'll check.
All right. Find out. Maybe we should sounds like a topic. Indie gaming.
Indie
get Darren game. Back up from Bastion fame and
there
some
we go
other people.
Yeah, that was a great episode last time. I mean, it was great to hear his insights on working with that development.
Yeah.
So, yeah, indie games. I tend to end up there more often than not because I can't wait 2 hours while the intro story unfolds with very little gameplay. That drives me crazy. right now. And so I need more action. I think I'm from a I'm from a child of the 80s, and so I lean on Poison when they said, I want action tonight.
Uh-huh. So I've been hearing things about Dark Souls, that is, that's old school, although old school these days seems to be more for it's really difficult rather than it's some kind of retro thing. So
right. Well, dude, I just moved, and I've got my 2600, I've got my NES, I've got the Sega Master System, I got PS1, PS2, I got all the old consoles, right?
Yeah.
And I busted a couple of those out with the girls, and it's like, that shit is hard! And so, yeah, I mean, if retro means hard, I mean, yeah, that shit was fucking hard.
So, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's like Prince of Persia. So, only one life. You die, you're gone. Start over.
Yeah, right.
And there's
right.
the timer thing, you know?
So, I mean, that's an interesting trend for developers to kind of come back to. Again, it's that reward versus punishment ratio.
Yeah. Yeah. What amount of frustration is fun?
Right.
Yeah, it's the difficult thing. I'm glad I'm not a designer. It's a difficult job.
Agreed.
Let's go on about something you just briefly mentioned to me, is that you've got this new thing going. You're going to be a writer, a professional writer.
Well, so I've been doing a lot of writing in the last year or so with Designing Sound and my audio implementation great series. And looks like for the next while, I'll be picking up the torch for Jesse Harlan, writing the sound articles in Game Developer Magazine every month.
Cool.
He's moving on to other things and other pursuits, and has graciously passed the torch off to me. And now I know who to blame over the next period of time while I'm toiling away trying to come up with interesting things to talk about in that monthly column. So I'm fired up about it. It's super exciting, and I hope to kind of continue moving forward with game audio relevant topics and trying to bring some different things to light.
I'm sure you're still going to be writing for Designing Sound, right?
A little bit here and there.
All right, good to hear. And what's your, do you know what your first subject of business will be? Can you shed light on it, or do you want to keep it a secret until it's actually there?
Jess has been writing the article for about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Before him, it was Alexander Brandon. And before him, it was George Sanger. But I guess, I kind of want to kick it off with a bit of a, I don't want to say historical retrospective, but I at least want to take a moment of pause and kind of, you know, turn the telescope backwards a little bit and pay homage to some of the people who have, you know, laid the groundwork in our industry. And so we'll see. We'll see how that ends up. Deadline's coming hard and fast. So this does bring up an interesting opportunity I had the other day. So I'm here in Minneapolis, and we have a classical music station in Minnesota Public Radio. And
is that part of NPR? Just because I'm going to interrupt you there for a second, because my favorite podcast in the world right now, sorry, Gamers with Jobs, you've lost your seat, is the Radio Lab podcast. It's got nothing to do with games, but it's every time it's the most well-crafted radio or podcast really ever. Definitely go and find it if you haven't heard of it. So go on, Minnesota.
A gal named Emily Reese has been doing something called the Top Score podcast.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Last 6 or 8 months, and she gets various game music composers on and talks to him about making music. And it's kind of this bridge between classical music that usually goes on and the kind of new classical aesthetic of a lot of game composers. And so she's been bridging the gap with this podcast, and they had a discussion recently in town that my wife and I were able to attend with Jesper Kidd.
Ah, of Assassin's Creed fame.
Yep. And so he was in town live on the radio talking about the Assassin's Creed series and his work for it. And of course, Revelations has just come out. And so, you know, through excerpts and discussions about various aspects of Assassin's Creed, they just kind of brought that music and that aesthetic to a different audience. And so this was a really cool opportunity. Again, kind of in middle America here, but a really cool thing she's got going. And she's had, you know, Marty O'Donnell, the composers for Stacking, the game that Double Fine did earlier this year. Just a lot of different composers talking about what they do and how that relates, I won't say directly to classical music, but, you know, it's very much in the same way that something like Video Games Live is trying to bridge the gap between typical listeners of classical music and our current generation, which is exposed to classical music themes and techniques through games. This, the podcast that she's doing, is really helping to connect those two worlds. It was cool to see families out with kids, you know, teenagers and whatnot. Sure. Yeah, really cool. Really cool. What's up with this Radiolab podcast? What's that all about?
Well, first of all, it's very well crafted. They definitely up the ante as far as production value in podcasts up to the limit. Custom music for every episode, it seems. Sound design to the gazoo. Really edited very well, and they follow this really interesting path of stories, and the last episode that they released a couple days ago was about the face of the CPR dummies, and that it's a mask from this French woman who apparently committed suicide by jumping into a river. And they kind of follow this trail and to see what they can find out about it, and mostly by talking to scientists, because one of the things that is a common thread on it is that it's all science-based. They had a really good one about loops, just something general like loops, and they'll have various different things on that theme, but all of it really, really thoughtful and really interesting. Definitely one of the most consistently superb quality podcast out there. But you know, they've got a production team, and they definitely are a professional theme, and make the rest of us look like amateurs that we are.
And we're having fun. That's what's
important. We're having fun. I think it's good that, but I was really actually Ian Dorse.
Yep.
You must know him. He's a composer for games. Pulled me onto him through Facebook. And it's funny because Ian wrote the original theme for the Gamers with Jobs podcast. So that's actually how I kind of found out about Ian. Because he wrote the theme for the podcast that I really loved. And his name was there, so I clicked on his link for years ago. So anyways, there are so many cool podcasts. It's just
I find myself at times reaching for podcasts.
You know, which one? Now we're talking about podcast, games-related podcast that everybody needs to check out is the one that Irrational Games does.
Yeah.
Also related, actually, to the Gamers with Jobs podcast, because one of the guys that produces it is also one of the producers for the Gamers with Jobs podcast. He's also the one that did the panel discussion with Ken Levine and the other guys from BioShock over at PAX. That was going around the game developer community for sure a couple months ago. And he interviewed Guillermo del Toro, Ken Levine did, on the latest two episodes. And it was terribly, terribly interesting and terribly, terribly funny. So it's also well worth checking out.
Well, of course, Guillermo del Toro working with Volition on a game coming up here soon, and so they're in production on that. Bound to be kind of interesting, right? A very outspoken gamer dad as well.
And also not somebody who's afraid to say no to a project if he doesn't feel it's a fit. You know, he's definitely somebody that he does very commercial projects, but also always ones that he wants to do something with creatively as well. So I kind of like that approach, you know. That's close to how I would feel. How I would say I would approach it if I was picking my projects. I'm an in-house guy, so
right.
I do pick my projects, but it's not like like you're in the movie world where you pick your projects and move on to the next. In games, right. It's kind of different. But they talk about that as well over at the podcast. So it's a really intelligent discussion, and it's those podcasts that are about subjects that you know a lot about and care a lot about that don't make you feel angry are the ones that are really good, in my opinion. Because there are those about things that I like that will frustrate the hell out of me, and I hope our podcast doesn't do that to some people. If it does, I'm sorry. Trying not to frustrate you.
And having a good time.
Definitely.
I'm going to jump media types, but this reminded me, there's an interview with Patrick Balfrop on the sound for Bioshock Infinite in the latest Killscreen magazine.
Right, what's his role on Bioshock?
He's the audio lead.
Oh, okay.
On the new Bioshock. And, you know, he worked with Emily Ridgway on the first Bioshock.
Yeah.
And then split off, went to Harmonix for a while, worked on some Rock Band games, and now is back working on Bioshock Infinite. And again, Killscreen Mag has a all sound issue.
Oh, just really? Came
out. Yeah, yeah. And it's absolutely worth ordering and digesting because there's some really cool sound related articles in there. So, yeah, it reminded me of that because I've been leafing through that lately. There's an interview with Robin Arnault who did the Deep Sea audio-only game using the gas mask.
Yeah.
There's an interview with Nolan North in there talking about, you know, dialogue for Uncharted series and working with Naughty Dog. Cool guy who I got to meet when I was on site there.
Yeah.
There'll be a link up on the website. Absolutely jump off and get that ordered. It's hard copy only.
What we're going to do next, I think I should briefly mention, somebody won the competition from podcast number 12. Tony, he recognized the bear trap from Limbo rather quickly. He was actually the only one that responded. So either everybody got the message that he got it, or it was really difficult and he's the only one that actually recognized it, or people didn't think the prize was good enough, but everybody already had Bastion. That was it. Anyways, we might do that again sometime. I enjoyed it. Oh, I see Martin Stig Anderson, the composer of Bastion, liked the thing that where Tony wins it on Facebook. So if you haven't liked this on Facebook, like Damien, then maybe you should just see if you join Facebook and like us there. No, I'm just kidding, Damien. You don't have to cross over to the dark side just to like your own podcast. But if you already are in that evil empire that tracks every social step that you do in your everyday and everybody you're connected to, just like us on just search for Game Audio Podcast there and like us. You'll find out about latest episodes and things like that really quickly.
Two
or
words.
Follow us on Twitters, on the Twitters where Damien can be found, and that's where we are, Game Audio Podcast without the A in the cast.
Twitter, yeah, kind of love it. The community there is super awesome. If you dig that kind of thing, following the Game Audio hashtag is always got good stuff.
Oh, by the way, on the Game Audio hashtag, there's a sound design group on Facebook that's worth joining as well if you're there. But yeah, well, enough about social media, I guess. Let's tease for the next one. So for the next episode, we can't announce the guests yet, although one of them has been named in today's episode already. But we're not going to say who this person is yet.
It's a secret surprise.
Yes. Well, I mentioned not the name of one of the guests. Maybe you can mention then something way cooler, which would be like the general topic.
Well, so I think it's an idea that is talked about certainly on the side of game design a lot. And I think that we're, you know, interested in how that plays into sound's role in storytelling, and how you can reinforce and or help flesh out the story of a game through the use of sound and music and using those tools to support the gameplay.
Yeah. So if you have any particular questions for our secret guests, then, you know, let us know. And we'll see what we can do about it. And with that, we want to close it off, I guess.
Well, I guess I'll say that we know a lot of you have been working hard to get your titles out for the holiday season. We're kind of quickly approaching that, and we know it's been a tough slog, but from us to you, thanks for producing excellent game audio for your games. We know you're working hard at it, and hopefully not sacrificing too much of your health and or sanity.
Yeah.
But I think a resounding thank you from the game audio community for keeping things
hooray for us
at a high level of polish, and for doing things for the good of the community.
Yeah, and I wish you, if you are in crunch right now, at least 1 year of no crunch. That's what I wish for you. And on to the next one, I guess.
That sounds right.
Episode 14 will be coming your way by the end of the year.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yo, get in touch with us if you have any questions or feedback. You can reach us at inbox@gameaudiopodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.